ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Jack Chen, the CEO and co-founder of Loudhailer. Loudhailer is a technology company that was founded in 2014 to push the limits of Bluetooth technology to enhance real-life experiences. In light of COVID-19, the company pivoted and now leverages its technology in order to offer a cutting-edge contact and facility tracing solution. We're going to be talking to him today about Loudhailer, their pivot, and what everyone needs to know about COVID and contact tracing. Jack, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You were one of the first people I interviewed on this podcast back when you were just launching Loudhailer, and I fell in love with the power of the technology back then, and I've continued to follow what you're doing. So I'm so glad to have you back because you've been doing some really interesting and important work, and it's work that proves that even in a pandemic, there are opportunities to be found. But before we get too far into that, can you give us the elevator pitch description of what Loudhailer technology pre-COVID was?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So Loudhailer is a technology company that I co-founded in 2014. We push the limits of Bluetooth technology to enhance our real-life experiences. We connect smart devices to each other using our patented two-way Bluetooth technology. And that enables some really cool use cases, such as hyperlocal engagement and content delivery, offline messaging, and 3D indoor GPS for wayfinding.
So, and this is perfect if you're at a sporting event. I know like Wi-Fi, you never get on the network, but you can communicate with your party and you could also make purchases, find out quickest exit routes and things like that. So prior to COVID, when you talk about your use cases, who were your sort of basic clients? Like who would engage with you?
Sure. Our technology has been experienced from coast to coast, and we have installations of ranging from Long Beach, California. We're at the Convention and Entertainment Arts Center. To Newport, Rhode Island, where we have an installation throughout parts of Newport, Rhode Island. And there we are also part of a Working Cities Initiative, which is a Federal Reserve Bank of Boston funded initiative to looking at how to bridge the digital divide and providing economic opportunity to residents of the more economically disadvantaged areas. In Columbus, Ohio, we are part of the Greater Columbus Convention Center, and our network is also at the zoo, at the Columbus Airport, and Nationwide Arena. And there we can help attendees find things inside the building where, you know, inside a convention center, sometimes GPS doesn't work well. Mm. But we are also part of the Columbus Convention Center's reopening plan for COVID.
Oh, fantastic. Perfect segue into, so you've got this technology and then COVID happens, everything grinds to a standstill and you pivot. Which, you know, when you're focused in one direction, can sometimes be a hard thing to do, to see the forest for the trees, to shift your focus. Can you take us through that aha moment for you?
Sure. Yeah. So when the pandemic happened, there was a lot of discussion about public health tools for fighting it. Taiwan and South Korea, as you may have seen in the press, you know, have very effective contact tracing programs that help them control COVID. So then came Google and Apple's announcement around April of this year that they were working on a mobile app-based solution for contact tracing. And that was essentially looking at how long and how far smart devices are connected to each other using people's smartphones as a proxy. And that was the aha moment for us because we had our own method of connecting devices to each other. Except whereas before our technology was used to bring people together, now, you know,
You're going to keep them apart.
Now it's being used to keep them apart.
Well, it does doesn't keep them, it just tracks them, right? That's fascinating. And I think because you already had done it, you were ahead of the game, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we had 6 years of operating experience, right, in the field of working with Bluetooth. And there are a lot of, I mean, you know, I think in some ways we can make this as simple or as complicated as we want to make it.
But keep it simple.
No, but I mean, I think, you know, if you read the press right. And they talk about mobile apps and, oh, it's using Bluetooth, but it's so unreliable. But you know what? Wi-Fi is unreliable, right? So it's not really a question of one form of technology being necessarily better or worse. It's more just understanding the technology that you're working with. And we had a lot of years of experience with Bluetooth. We know how it behaves. And so we can adjust for that.
Right. So that was in April and you pivoted. And now let's jump ahead to now where we understand a lot more about the disease and how it spreads and that testing and contact tracing or facility tracing are keys to keeping the economy moving. First of all, can you explain the difference between contact tracing and facility tracing?
Sure. So contact tracing is about understanding when somebody has tested positive, who they were in contact with during their infectious period, which for COVID could be as long as 14 days. And the contact tracing is about trying to understand the nature of those contacts. You know, was it just somebody you walked by? Was it somebody you spent a good amount of time with? And the nature of that contact, you know, was it someone intimate with or just a passerby? And so that you can then notify those people who could have potentially been exposed and so that they can then in turn get tested and quarantine or isolate as appropriate. Facility tracing is not looking so much at who you've been in contact with, but rather where you've been inside the facility. There have been some cases reported in the medical journals. For example, there was one where a lady in China took an elevator on her own when she was still asymptomatic, and dozens of people in that building became infected from taking that same elevator.
That's a scary situation.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't know if she was wearing PPEs. We don't know the ventilation. There are a lot of things we don't know. You know, was she sneezing in the, I mean, although
she was just typhoid marrying up the whole elevator. Yeah.
Well, sneezing isn't really a COVID symptom. So, but it's, you know, so you don't really know, but other than because China has such stringent contact tracing program that they were able to know that these people did not catch it from other folks, but in fact caught it from being in that elevator.
That's right? Amazing.
And so facility tracing is really thinking about, well, if somebody who was positive during a time period, you know, what are the areas that should be cleaned or may, you know, require additional cleaning?
Right, right. So can you explain now, how Loudhailer fits into these needs? I mean, obviously we use things like, you know, hyperlocal connectivity and Bluetooth technology, but that can almost make your, you know, the layperson's eyes roll back in their head and they don't necessarily get exactly what this means. What does it mean? If I've got a phone and you've got a phone, how does the technology work?
Right. So the Google and Apple initiative is supporting public health authorities, right? Not employers. In fact, employers have no access to that information. And that's where we can come in because we can help employers focus on how to keep their staff and guests safe on premises and how they can open or reopen responsibly. You know, contact tracing is part of a multi-pronged solution. And so it's not like, you know, just because a company is doing symptom checking or questionnaire that they somehow don't need PPEs or anything else, it should be part of that solution. And so we give employers a technological tool by which they can You know, if an employee, or a contractor on premises is COVID positive, they can quickly identify whether they should inform any potentially exposed fellow employees to get tested. It's a way to try and stamp out any potential fires on your own, you know, at your own site faster.
Right. But I mean, I understand that, but I guess I want a little bit more, you know, you have a phone, I have a phone, we're both employees. What is the app doing?
Right.
How does it know that we've passed each other in the hallway or spent a certain amount of time together?
Well, you know, you can think of Bluetooth technology as some kind of a sound wave almost. And so if two phones have our software installed, if they're close enough to each other, they can, you know, quote unquote, hear each other.
Okay.
With our software and with Bluetooth. And then depending on where you are inside the facility, you know, you may be able to hear each other longer or, you know, louder or quieter. And we can also understand how long you have been, you know, near each other. So if you just walk by, then the likelihood of you have been exposed to each other is much smaller than if the two of you were in the room for, you know, 20 minutes.
But it keeps track, because I think also the issue is cumulative exposures, right? So if I walk by your desk let's say it's a few seconds, but I do it hundreds of times in a day, those add up. And and the software would know that, right? It would be able to do a cumulative tracking. Is that right?
Yes. And so so our mobile app will run in the background and people can still use their phones to do, you know, whatever it is they normally do. But we can aggregate the amount of time exposures that two people have had with each other. And with our experience, we can also understand, you know, we can adjust for depending on the kind of environment you work in, so that we don't, you know, we can minimize chances of any false, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that, you know, what if I'm in one office and, you know, and somebody else in another office and there's a wall between us, but we're close to each other. And so your technology knows if there's a wall there or not, correct?
Yeah. So we can,
or it can be programmed to know that there's a wall.
We can, and we can adjust for that. And we do have a hardware component that we call Bookie Box. And that's part of what makes the system, you know, scalable throughout a larger facility. Mm. And that, you know, one of the biggest, issues that technology writers had with the Google Apple approach was that it's two devices to each other and there's no context, right?
Right.
So if you were two people, let's say in a brownstone, in two different brownstones in Brooklyn, and it's just regular brick, you could potentially pick up each other, even though you're in different brownstones. And, you know, that is the nature of Bluetooth, because it could connect through certain surfaces easier than others. But with a Bookie Box in place, we would know that, oh, in fact, the two of you are not in the same room.
And also, unlike GPS, you have the ability to understand the vertical situation, correct?
Yes. And that's where, because we can, so for example, at the Columbus Convention Center, we have Bookie Boxes on different floors. Mm-hmm. And so as people are moving around, we know which floor that they're on. And that's different from the GPS approach, which is just, well, first of all, you know, again, GPS doesn't work very well inside airports and centers. So you wouldn't even know. And then if you're in different, you know, different floors, they would have trouble detecting that.
Right. Well, how quickly can this kind of solution be put into place? Like from the, I've signed the contract with Loudhailer to we have this solution up and running. How long does that process take?
Oh, we could get a customer set up in a few days.
Oh, wow. It's that fast. That's amazing. And what about, you had mentioned scalability. Is it really infinitely scalable? The Pentagon, which is sort of like a small city, it could work inside a giant office building like that, as well as a smaller building?
Right. So the Pentagon, I think, is a unique situation in that I've been told that it's a Faraday cage. I've never been inside it. I don't know, but
it is. Yes, it is. It does all sorts of things so that they can't be spied upon. So maybe it's a poor example from a,
our solution would work, inside a Faraday cage environment, meaning that because we're not using cell connections or using GPS, that we're connecting locally. So generally speaking, inside a Faraday cage environment, our solution would work. But we are designed to be scalable. And in fact, our sweet spot is with facilities that have large numbers of visitors. So for example, if you're corner pet store or a dentist office, it probably doesn't make sense to use our solution because you have a very controlled environment where you know who's coming in and who's going out. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about a convention center or a warehouse with, you know, hundreds of people, that's where we can come in and we can really help. And there's the bookie box I mentioned. That's minimal hardware requirement on the employer or the facility manager. And anybody who is coming on site just needs to participate in the program, just needs to download our app and activate it.
Oh, wow. So what's the competitive landscape right now for your work? Are there a lot of players who are offering different solutions, or are you pretty much the only game in town?
Well, so there, I think to think about the competitive landscape is really thinking about the different ways in which one could contact Trace. And so the most common method is the manual method. And that's essentially, you know, using some sort of a contact relationship management database to keep track of people who are coming in and out of a facility. And that is the most common place because, employers see it as being the most cost effective because it is the least amount of technological work. Mm. Challenge there is that it requires human behavior, right? People have to actually input who they've been near. And so if they don't put it in, it won't be captured.
Right. And if you don't know somebody, like your elevator example, if I'm in an office building, I may not know everybody if it's a big enough workforce.
Yeah. And I have to say I've had a lot of interesting conversations with different employers on how they approach it. So like one university that we spoke with said that they were going to use the CRM approach, but essentially what they're requiring students to do is input into an app the names of all the people that they've been near on a daily basis. And college students,
like that's going to happen. I mean, not for nothing, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough for just anybody, right, to do.
It's a way to get people to stay inside and not see anybody, because that just seems so onerous.
But it's all, you know, it's all relying on the individual to do it. And so your program, a manual approach is only going to be as good as the data.
Well, I guess that's a thing also. I mean, what you've described is pretty frictionless once the individual has signed up, right? Once I've signed up and I've consented, it doesn't ask a lot of me.
That's right. It's meant to be. And, you know, because you're trying to make it as little work, you're trying to software a number of things. You want it to be as accurate as possible. You want it to be as minimal effort as possible on the individual to comply. Mm-hmm. Right. But you want it to be scalable as well. That's where we come in. Now, another way to do contact trace is using sensors. So like a good example would be ID badges. Now, the challenge there, and again, we learned this from talking to certain employers, is that so if you're in a facility that requires an ID badge to enter this, you know, that would work. But what they told us was that, well, they have employees who are trying to be nice. And so they hold the door open for others.
Right.
And there's nothing, you know, there's no ill intent in that, but it screws up the data.
Right. Right. Of course.
Right. And then there's the mobile app approach like us, but that could differ depending on you're using Bluetooth or GPS or whatever else. And then the final kind of main category for contact tracing is using AI and facial recognition. So essentially using cameras to
that's kind of creepy.
It's creepy, but you know what? There are a couple of parking lot chains across the country where it's being used at over 3,000 parking lots.
Wow.
And you may not even know if you were parking in one of, I mean, I don't know.
I would think they don't have to reveal that to you as a user.
Well, I don't know how they would reveal it. Like, if do you read all the signs?
Oh, that's true. The gazillion signs. No.
Yeah. But,
So California has just passed some regulations, California AB 685 and SB 1159. Can you explain what those regs mean for employers?
Right. So those are two very significant new pieces of legislation that California passed this year. And there's a lot that it covers. And, you know, I'm not a California attorney then to be able to explain all of it. But there are two pieces on reporting that are very relevant to our conversation right now. And I think high level, what California is trying to do is to have the ability to shut down a work site if it turns out that it's a hotspot.
Right.
And so how do you do that? Well, what AB 685 requires is that employers notify all employees and contractors and employees of contractors to of any potential COVID exposures. And so if somebody who was on premise, now it does not seem to cover customers, right? So you're not responsible for customers, but
that's big gap, but anyway, yeah.
But it does address it does address all public and private employers. Right. So it except for medical facilities, it looks like almost everybody else is required to comply. And so if one of your employees tests positive, you then need to look at the past 14 days of who else was at that work site and notify all those people. So it's not looking at contact tracing in the sense of looking at how much time you spent with the COVID positive individual. Instead, it's just, okay, this COVID individual was at this work site. Who else was there for the past 14 days? Now, the kicker is you have to notify them of the potentially exposed people within one business day of becoming aware of this. So that's not a lot of time. And if your method of keeping track of people is like paper, you know.
Oh, right. That's a hot, tall order to get 14 days worth of information.
Yeah. And what happens, like, so if you use a manual approach, you know, what happens if one of your employees didn't note all the people that was in, and then that somehow, you know, there's no excuse for that under the law. So it's pretty significant. And especially if you have multiple work sites, then you may, you know, and this employee has gone to multiple work sites, then you've got to notify multiple people. I mean, multiple locations. And so, and what's interesting is that nobody is talking about AB 685 except for California lawyers.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we've just had this election and President-elect Joe Biden campaigned on a clear federal strategy for combating COVID. And even with a vaccine in the offing, it won't, you know, not everybody will be covered with vaccine. We're going to have this period of time where it is going to be critical to be able to trace people effectively. Do you think that we're liable to see federal regulations that are patterned after these California regulations?
You know, I think that public health contact tracing has a large number of challenges, whether it's funding or resources, people, whatever. I think it's possible, right, that that once there is a coordinated national effort at the federal level, that they could potentially take this California AB 685 approach, but adopt it at the federal level. So essentially recruiting employers into
being part to help.
Of the solution. Yes. And because a federal mandate for contact tracing just won't work politically in this country.
Right? Oh, you think?
It's not going to be possible, but it's different when you require an employer to do it, right?
And then you actually get, you get the coverage you need, at least, you know, at least you get a lot more coverage.
That's right.
So I know you've been working with several different types of businesses in different sectors. And you might even have a handle based on your conversations about the kind of concerns that different types of sectors are raising. I mean, because we talked about the importance, at least on the very front end, the person signs up, that they sign up to participate. So what are the kinds of concerns, challenges that different sectors are sharing with you? And then how do you address those things? I mean, I know that's a giant conversation, but, you know, maybe the sort of Cliff Notes version of how you're seeing differences between sectors.
Right. Sure. So, the customers who are most ready to install a system or to, you know, take an approach are the ones that are in the, in the sectors that have to operate right now. So food, is a big sector, and we are also talking to a lot of school districts. And, you know, what's interesting is I would say a surprising percentage of the employers we talk to, in fact, don't allow their employees to have their phones with them during working hours.
Interesting.
Yes, especially if you're thinking about food preparation, right? Or if you're in operating in a sensitive environment where there may be intellectual property that you don't want people.
I didn't even think of that. That's interesting.
Right. And so, as we learned this, then it was like, well, wait a second, there's all this talk about Google and Apple's mobile phone approach, and yet no one, but what we think about is, well, people work, your work day is a significant amount of your day. So even if everyone used their phone, but if their phone is in a locker, how do you really do contact tracing? And so we actually just, it's in field testing right now, but we are using an affordable health wearable.
Interesting.
So people who are not allowed to have their phones for whatever reason, security or otherwise, can wear a health band, and the health band can talk to our Bookie box, and they can detect each other.
Would it download the information to the phone? I mean, just because how much information can be stored on a band? I mean,
So
it wouldn't relate to the phone at all. It would be totally separate.
Yeah. It would just relate to, the phone would talk to our Bookie box. So the person wouldn't even need to have a phone.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great too, because then you have a consistency of equipment, I would think.
And it's also, you know, so for if you have, you know, some of the food preparation industries, in fact, have a lot of transient workers who may not have smartphones and, you know, and whatever else, the health band is an affordable alternative. And it also, especially in food preparation, so, you know, the health band can also be worn as a clip. So if you're serving food, you can wear a wearable, but if you're preparing food, you can't, because it's considered jewelry. And the solution we have kind of addresses both. And, you know, phones, the health wearables that we're looking at don't have a camera. So if you're working in an IP sensitive environment, the employers don't have to worry about the workers taking pictures.
That's amazing. That is so interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, which is crazy, since I used to work in an IP sensitive world, that it didn't even cross my mind. So interesting, so timely, so important. And I'm so glad you're doing the work you're doing. And I hope facilities adopt the technology to help everyone feel safer about going back to work. Thank you so much for sharing and spending time in conversation with me.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you so much for the opportunity.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.